HGGS, us and them.
Hello and welcome to HGGS podcast series, Us and Them. Today we have Tatiana Kasima from University of Tartu. Welcome, Tatiana.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Today we are going to talk about two works of Tatiana. The first one is her presentation at our forum titled Magical Urbanism, Thresholds, Hybridity, and the Transformative Power of Us and Them in Wolf, Lispector, and Lahiri. And the second one is this wonderful article that she published titled Heterotopic Moments of Being in Clarice Lispector's The Besieged City. So let's start the discussion first with giving you opportunity to explain your academic background, Tatiana.
Thank you very much. So I came into comparative literature after I've been teaching literature to high school students at the International School of Dentists and Tallinn European School. And I have been thinking about how to engage with literature more and how to make students more interested in literary texts. And then I thought that one way to do it is to study literature more in depth. And I did my master's in comparative literature. I was particularly interested in flaneur and walking in the city. And after that, kind of took my project further and continued with my doctoral degree. I'm a third year student now, and I'm working on magical urbanism.
Well, then the question following that information is that what actually attracted your attention to that topic? Because it seems like a topic that is not really heard usually in the academic world, literary urban studies. So what was the motivation that you deal with this topic?
That's really nice to kind of stop and think about it now. I think that's a good time to think about it. You know, because when you're immersed in the topic, you're just doing it and you don't really have time to just kind of step back and think about what you're doing. I think primarily it comes from the fact that we live in cities and we experience urban environment all the time. And I think most of the time we don't know what we are actually experiencing. So it has to do with pace of life. It has to do with kind of being unable to stop and think what's actually happening around you. I think when we take a literary piece and we read it, then we can really think about this description of an urban moment, and that makes us stop and think. So I think this is one of the motivations. And I mean, it's also quite practical. I mean, my interest in literary urban studies comes from walking in the city. You know, you walk, you experience, and then I think as an extension of that, you want to record what you're experiencing. And then the question is, you know, how do you do it? How do you, you know, put it into words, or do you take a picture? Do you write it down? Do you talk to someone? So I guess I do it through research. This is one way how I kind of connect with what I'm experiencing. And then, you know, it's always very exciting to talk to other people and about their experiences in different cities and traveling, and there are just so many different ways to connect with other people. So it turns into a very practical thing, actually. So that's what's so exciting about it.
Thank you. So let's start with our formal part of our discussion. And if I understood it correctly, there's just one word that plays in your research a key role, which is heterotopic moments of being, a term that you used, and it was actually created by Michel Foucault, the philosopher. Would you like to elaborate on that concept for our listeners who are not really familiar with this category of thinking?
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great question. And it's also something that I have been working on for some time now. And I think the evolution of this idea is also very exciting. So maybe I will start by talking about how I kind of arrived at this idea and then, you know, where it's going now. Because literary urban studies is such an interdisciplinary field that this is, you know, yet another question that always arises. What does it actually mean? What kind of fields are you combining? And when you do combine these different fields, what is going to be the result of that? So my idea is that I would like to bring in more urban studies into literary studies. I think this is what I have discovered along the way. By combining heterotopic spaces, which indeed come from Michel Foucault's idea of heterotopia, with a moment of being, which comes from Virginia Woolf's thinking and writing, I thought that this would be a nice bridge to connect literature and urban studies. Nice, maybe is not the best word here. Exciting, but also challenging. And the challenge here is that you arrive at this new idea, heterotopic moments of being, and then you start applying it to literary texts to see what practically will happen, actually. And I think with the text that I've been working with in this article, the Clarice Lispector's novel, The Besieged City, that was particularly exciting because I struggled with the text in many ways in order to understand how to interpret it. But I think heterotopic moments of being really opened it up. And what it resulted in is this idea how flexible urban spaces actually are, and the fact that everything that seems static and fixed and very physical is actually very fluid and able to transform at any moment in time. And the main character of the novel, Lucrezia Neves, she demonstrates this incredibly well, because not only she experiments with urban spaces by sort of being there and doing different things, like, you know, simple things like walking or talking to someone or looking around, she actually merges with the space around her. And, you know, the way she does it is always very exciting and unexpected for our listeners. Maybe I'm not going to give out too much, you know, go to the Besieged City and see what it's like, because it is a very exciting novel. And I think it's a very experiential novel. You have to read it and experience it yourself. So that could be a very exciting thing to read.
There is also another, I would say, maybe literary or philosophical category, and you also briefly mentioned about the Woolf story and the distinction between moments of being and not being, and also maybe we can categorize it as moments of being. Would it be possible also to combine this dichotomy with the, as you mentioned, the heterotopic moments of being in your research?
I really like this idea now that you mentioned it, because you know what? Heterotopic moments of non-being sound really exciting now that I think about it. I think this is the excitement of interdisciplinarity, really. I mean, I think this is what's so unexpected about it. So, yes, you can, and then you will find out different examples that will open up maybe in different ways. I think in the literary text, I mean, I think what's very interesting about a literary text is that you never know what you're going to find. It's completely unexpected, and the moment you start applying different tools to a literary text, you can come up with so many different readings of the text. It opens up discussion even further. And then what I see also, it always takes me back to questions such as, what is a city? So in the end, the question is, what is it? And I would welcome as many different definitions as possible. And I think that's, you know, what I talked about at the beginning. That's why it's so practical. Everyone, while, you know, thinking about it, can really connect to it and think, okay, I live in a city, but what does it mean for me? So I think moment of being or non-being deals with that very directly. It's about your experiences. It's about how you frame them, how you understand them, how you record them, and eventually how you remember them.
Well, building on this discussion, what is a city, which is a really great question, actually, that lies at the heart of your research, I would like to ask a provoking question to you, which you also use in one of your articles, maybe to get an answer from your audience. But I'd like to ask the same question to you. Where do we have to stand in order to see the city? Maybe we can also change the definition of a city depending on where do we stand, right?
I really like this question, and it does come directly from the Besieged City as well. Whether you're standing on a hill far away from the city, looking at the city, or you're standing in the square right at the heart of the city, looking at the city. Well, I would say that another thing that I deal with, this idea of being in the city, it has to do with, for example, looking at the city through a window, or looking at the city from behind a wall, or so there are all these really interesting vantage points. I also think that you can then, if you collect these different experiences of where you are in the city and you compare them to each other, then maybe the definition of the city will start emerging, because you will have these multiple points of reference, you know. I'm just thinking very quickly to the besieged city now. I mean, the first example that comes to mind is when Lucrezia is standing on the hill, and she is not in the city anymore. She's in the outskirts. But the city is sort of transforming in front of her eyes, and she notices these transformations. And then there is this really interesting moment when she wants to imagine what it would be like to kind of represent this moment in a postcard and fix this moment, sort of record it, but through a postcard. And then also Virginia Woolf has a very interesting, it's a tiny comment actually in one of her stories, where the two characters are looking at London while they are in the garden, and then there's the wall surrounding the garden. So they are looking at the city and they see, is it a boot or is it London? And, you know, what do you do with this information? Because these two things, they do not really, you know, work together. But this is what they see, and this is the city they experience. So I think looking for these tiny examples, it's always so exciting. And then when you bring them together, you can really piece the city together. Virginia Woolf also has this really nice quotation, anything can be out of the window, desert, London, something else, but just this really beautiful quotation that you never know what you're going to see when you look at the city.
Well, changing our perspective to the relationship between maybe us and them and the magical urbanism. So this chaotic nature of the city also maybe makes us consider the relationship between us and them, and how does that play a role actually in the urban life. So maybe can we consider us and them as a predicate of magical urbanism, as a pillar that we should also take into consider when we define magical urbanism in these books, because we need some kind of a contradiction in order to create this magical environment, maybe.
That's really packed. Okay, that's good. I like the contradiction, because my immediate reaction is that the city is built on contradictions and is built on inconsistencies. It's all about having things somehow brought together, they don't quite fit together. And I think this is what I'm uncovering more and more, because, you know, when I deal with this concept of urban porosity, I think this is exactly what I discover. It's how things that shouldn't fit actually fit somehow, and then you're trying to understand, so how do they actually fit? So in more practical terms, so it's not so abstract, it's just about how people basically live next to each other, how they manage to cohabit the same space, and what they do in order to achieve that, and what kind of problems they face, and what obstacles arise when people from different walks of life and cultures try to live together. So this I think, you know, this is a real challenge, and this is something that cities are struggling with. How do we open up spaces for people to live in? As simple as that, but this is not simple at all. So what makes it magical, and I don't want to romanticize the term too much, although there is a little bit of that in there too, and I think it's not entirely a bad thing to do that, because we have to have, you know, an ideal vision of what cities should be and could be. I mean, we have to thrive for this potential in the best way possible. It has to be this open space where people can kind of really feel that they own it, that they can, in simple terms, do what they want to do in those spaces. I mean, I would say that from my research, Jhumpa Lahiri is probably the best example of that. She just depicts urban spaces in such a subtle way that you almost don't notice how she's doing it. And I mean, she does have people from very different backgrounds occupying the same space. I'll just give a brief example from her recent collection, Racconti Romani, the Roman stories, and the story is called The Steps. And it's basically, you know, in my reading, it's a collection of urban vignettes, which are every story is like a separate episode, but they are all brought together under the same title, The Steps, where different characters from different backgrounds experience something on the same steps in Rome. And it's just such a beautiful idea that you have all these different experiences brought together, but they all happen in the same space, and the urban space also changes as the characters change and kind of find their way around the city they either visit after being away for many years, or they're new there, or they have just arrived, or, you know, they're a teenager, or... So all these very different experiences brought together. It seems simple, but it's not. But it reflects reality very well.
And also, we cannot just interpret it as our classical traditional dichotomy of good and bad, or us and them, maybe. Because I'm quoting again from your abstract, dichotomy of us and them can result in conflict, misunderstanding, fear, alienation, but also produces hybrid cultures where identities and traditions merge in unexpected way. So city maybe is the best place to have this merging effect in terms of the cultures and also new identities. Maybe we should also consider these differences as not in the sense of bad implication that can cause bad implications, but also can create beautiful things in the urban life.
Well, it's supposed to enrich and create new urban spaces. Absolutely. I mean, this is how I would like to see that. Yes. And I mean, it does happen. I think that's always very, very exciting to notice this examples when this does happen. Yes. And that was also like very nicely put together. Thank you.
And also maybe talking about the need to be invisible and anonymous in the city. Do you think that is it a current problem that people cannot find these spaces to become anonymous or invisible in the city? Or is it just a part of the city life, actually, so that if you are living in a really big city, you can consider yourself as anonymous or invisible automatically?
Well, Clarice Lispector has this really nice quotation that a crowd in New York is the best place where to hide. So there is something in that you are... You're hidden in the crowd. I think this image is very powerful. You're hidden in plain sight. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it and what it actually means. And I mean, it goes back to the, you know, first flaneur story by Edgar Allan Poe, The Man in the Crowd, where you have this man following another man in the crowd, and what it actually means if you start following someone in the crowd randomly. And interestingly enough, Jhumpa Lahiri also has a short episode in her book Whereabouts, which is also a collection of very short urban experiences put together under one title. But what happens there is that it already happens towards the end of the book, and the main character, who is nameless, is about to leave the city where she has been living for a long time, and then she's just running some errands around the city before she needs to catch her train, and she sees a woman in the crowd who is dressed exactly like her and looks very similar to her. And then there is this idea that she starts following her as if she's following her double, who stays in the city while she is going to leave. And I think, you know, this is just such an interesting connection to where this idea of who we connect to in the city, can we really connect to others in the city, how we do it, and again, you know, what it means to be visible or invisible.
Maybe as a last point in our formal episode, methodological question about how can we also interact other kind of artworks with the literary research, because in your research you also took the example of the cover page of the besieged city in its English translation. It was depicted the Giorgio de Chirico's painting of the Enigma of the Fatality, and you also combined your impressions or about this picture, about this depiction, with the literary text. So how was this experience worked, and what were the methodological challenges when you tried to combine these two different artworks, these two different mediums?
Thank you for this question. I have almost given up on that, but I decided to persevere. This works on multiple levels that I am really challenged by, but I want to bring them together, and I'm really looking for a way how to do it. So what I mean by that is, the first level here is that Clarice Lispector met Giorgio de Chirico in Rome because her portrait was painted by him. So there is the first kind of the biographical level here, right, which I do not want to ignore, and I somehow want to integrate into this whole experience. So there is Clarice Lispector, a person, there is Clarice Lispector, a writer, there is Giorgio de Chirico, a person, and a painter. So you have all these levels already, right? You have all these layers. And then they meet and then create something new, right? This very famous portrait of Clarice Lispector. On top of that, Giorgio de Chirico also depicts cityscapes, which feature on the covers of, you know, Lispector's books. So this is, you know, again, another layer that comes here. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking what it could potentially mean, and how it could, how the painting speaks to the text and the other way around. And if they do communicate, what would be, what we can learn, you know, from this dialogue, if you put them side by side. So, and that's, you know, that's when I decided to persevere, and I didn't want to give up because I wanted to see what this conversation potentially can be. So what it resulted in is that you look very closely at some of the lines in the novel, and you see whether they are potentially inspired by the painting. It's just like an extra step that you make, you know, using your own imagination and using your own kind of background of what this dialogue could be. So it's about bridging the gap between the two medium, and it's never easy. It's always a big challenge. But I think this is the whole point here, is that you do want to see how these mediums communicate. And I've been trying to do more of that as well when I also looked at, for example, Virginia Woolf's sisters, Vanessa Bell's cover jackets that she painted for Virginia Woolf's short story collections and novels. Again, there is this whole idea of, you know, this personal connection, but also connection through literature and art. So I would really like to work more with that, because for me it reflects the multi-layered nature of urban environments, which are exactly that. You have all these layers that are somehow work together, but you don't quite know how they communicate. So you really need to uncover that.
Thank you, Tatiana. At the end of our interview, I prepared you two informal questions. One is more related with the formal topics. I would like to ask you, name me a city that you felt most magical urbanism when you visited this city. Or you can also just come up with three most magical cities that you have visited. It shouldn't be the beautiful one, but in terms of your past experience and your research efforts, that you felt these magical elements in these cities?
Beautiful question. Thank you. My immediate reaction was Vienna. I am thinking of motivating my answer now. And
sure, yeah. What was your motivation when you directly gave me the answer of Vienna?
Yes, I don't hesitate with the answer, but I'm thinking it is just a very intricate connection of everything that Vienna has to offer, with a complete openness to offer it. I mean, the city is full of history and exciting things to uncover, and they seem to be very very accessible. They seem to be really open to you. So I wonder, you know, how this really works. And I think this is the magical element here. It's the openness of all those layers, urban layers that I've been talking about before. I think this is something that I have experienced.
Sure, yeah. I think I also visited Vienna, and I totally agree with the fact that it's a magical city. And also, the second question would be, while your travels across the world, not just for academic purposes, but also for the touristic purposes, do you have difficulty to visit cities right now after all of the efforts that you have contributed with your research, that you have this, I would say, psychological problem with seeing things objectively, but not through the eyes of a researcher? So that does it also an effect that you suffer from when you have this enjoyable touristic moments?
Okay, so the other day in Heidelberg, I'm walking down the street and I see a woman sitting on the balcony listening to the radio, and I can also hear, you know, what she's listening to, and I immediately stop and I think, urban porosity, here it is. I wouldn't say that it creates a distraction or abstraction from, you know, experiencing the city. I would actually say that it adds on to my experiences, certainly. So I think that it's just, it makes it more exciting. It certainly does. And I mean, another thing that I've been thinking about, I was thinking, wouldn't be, you know, and I think I already do that, but wouldn't it be exciting to, you know, read the book of the city you're in? You know what I mean? So, and I've done that before, and I think that really kind of adds another layer onto it. You know, you're in Paris and maybe you're reading Hemingway and sort of, you're there and your experiences are heightened by what you're reading, or, you know, you're in Vienna and you're reading Stefan Zweig, and again, you know, this also creates an extra layer to your experiences. So that's not bad at all. I would say that it's just opens more avenues for you to experience life. So it's great.
I will take that as a wonderful recommendation for our listeners. If you like to visit a city, just find a book that happens in that city, and that will also maybe contribute to your experiences. Thank you, Tatiana, for this wonderful interview, and we hope to see you maybe in our next events, and we'll stay in touch. Thank you again for this interview.
Thank you very much. It's been really great talking to you today. Thank you.